It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Veronica Rickert will be back on Monday.
Coming up, we'll learn how a new social media app is changing the way students on college campuses communicate, and we'll ask you how you use social media.
But first, it's time for our weekly review of state news, the Wisconsin News Roundup.
The State Assembly passed a number of bills this week designed to cut back on food share fraud. We'll take a look at where they go from here. And in business news, the Madison Oscar Mayer plant announced it'll be closing, a move that will affect nearly 1,000 employees in Dane County.
For the latest on those stories and more, we're joined by Robert Menser, storytelling editor for the Wausau Daily Herald and Gannett Central Wisconsin Media. Rob, welcome back.
Hello.
Well, starting off, what kind of changes did the State Assembly pass for the food share program?
So it's part of a trend. The new limits on the way public benefits can be used and the way the state's going to administer the food share program. There were three separate bills, each fiddled in different ways. But probably the most dramatic one was to allow the state to seize accounts that haven't been accessed in 6 months or more. So then the recipients would have to either request that the program be reactivated or reapply. It's going to cost the state about $1.3 million to implement the policy, and there were Democrats who questioned whether it would save any more money than that.
Do we know how many accounts potentially stay active for 6 months?
So it's hard to know. It's a couple thousand. I think there was another. It's related to another bill. Create heightened scrutiny on people who find that report that they've lost their food share cards four times or more in a year. There was a report a couple years ago that found that there were about 2,000 cases of people who reported food share cards missing six times or more in a year. So that's sort of an estimate of how many people might be monkeying with the system. Although, maybe those people just lost their cards, I guess.
And so how are the legislators on the Republican side who are proposing these changes, how are they justifying this? Are they pointing to specific statistics of the amount of fraud that's going on?
So there is not specific statistics on the amount of fraud that's going on, and this is the key criticism of these policies, is that it's sort of political posturing. And an example of this is as good an illustration as any is, they passed a bill that would require a photo to be added to food share debit cards. But what's slightly weird about that is that there is not a requirement that store clerks look at the ID. In fact, federal rules say that clerks can't decline people's food share based on the ID. And also, anyone who's ever been to a grocery store knows that they don't look at those. They said, sort of debit or credit. So the criticism is that these limits are basically about political posturing. It's seeming like it's sort of tough on fraud, and it's a big question mark how much effect they're really going to have.
So what's the next step for these changes to the food share program?
So this is assembly bill, so they go to the Senate, and I do not have a wind, or I don't have an inside track on whether they'll be taken up in the Senate or not. There's no indication that these are on the fast track, let's put it that way, but it's the kind of thing that Republicans sometimes like to do, so we'll see.
So in other news this week, Heinz Kraft announced it will be closing its Oscar Mayer plant in Madison. Lots of jobs that will be lost. What's the story behind why they're closing this particular plant?
So big story, obviously, down in your neck of the woods. The plant has been there for almost 100 years. Kraft Heinz is moving the headquarters to Chicago, and that's a loss of 1,000 jobs. It's sort of just an identifiable sort of high profile business. What I've seen reported is that the facility was this big giant building, and it was like largely empty, a lot of empty space in that building, and that was a factor there. Just simply maintaining that facility became questioned by the parent company.
We're talking with Robert Menser. He is storytelling editor for the Wausau Daily Herald and Gannett Central Wisconsin Media. We're taking a look at the big news stories of the past week here in Wisconsin, and so there was an announcement some months ago that 165 salaried positions would be laid off at Oscar Mayer. But did any state, county officials see this big closure coming? And,
yeah.
And if not, why not?
Yeah, great question, and I think that we'll hopefully learn more in coming days. The simple answer is no. State officials, local officials say that they were blindsided by this. The Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation had not had a chance to sort of offer tax incentives or look at ways of trying to keep this this company to stay. Of course, the flip side of that is that the state says no one at Oscar Mayer asked. So maybe there was nothing that reasonably the state could have done.
It does seem that both New York and Iowa did offer incentives to keep or at least minimize closings in their areas. Iowa is actually going to be benefiting from some of the closure news in Wisconsin. So, you know, is this going to be, we didn't know, so we didn't do anything, or should something have been done proactively?
Sure. Well, we've seen it done before. Mercury Marine or other lots of businesses, Harley Davidson, for goodness sake, you can question whether the state's deals ultimately were good deals, and some people have questioned whether the state should be providing the level of incentives or throwing money at these companies. But it certainly is something that happens when a major employer is looking at leaving. It is a common practice that there will be at least an opportunity for the state to try to offer incentives that might cause them to stay. And yeah, I think with something on this scale, definitely there will be questions about why Wisconsin didn't do that or wasn't able to do that.
So Rob, you cover news in central Wisconsin. How does this particular plant closing story compare to those in your area?
Sure. Well, it's an identifiable major employer, and it's one of these things that the plant has been around for 100 years in Madison. So I analogize it to like the closure of a paper mill in central Wisconsin, Wisconsin Rapids. It's one of these cultural points that maybe your uncle worked there, or your grandfather worked there, or your neighbors worked there. It just has that sort of effect when it's this sort of big long-standing business. It just ends up touching a lot of people. The thing to say, I mean, it's worth saying, Madison's unemployment rate right now is 3% or something. Madison is doing very well, and it has throughout the, even in the Great Recession, typically does better than many other regions in the state. So there is resiliency in the local economy. But I mean, you know, that's probably little comfort for folks who are losing their job and facing a lot of uncertainty, at least in the short term.
As well as all of the businesses that rely on those employees.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's a big loss. It's a big blow.
So finally, the Joint Finance Committee approved a $350 million borrowing plan for transportation purposes. This is a ball that's been kicked back and forth quite a bit over the last months. How did that vote finally shake out?
Yeah, so this is I find this really interesting. This was a major fight. We've talked about it before here on the show in the state budget time that there were Republicans who objected to the level of borrowing and bonding for largely highway construction that was part of Governor Scott Walker's budget. So it was passed in the budget that they would have permission to bond out for this up to $350 million if approved by the Joint Finance Committee, if they thought it was necessary. So guess what? The DOT this week came back with requesting the full amount that they could request, $200 million for the first year, and it did pass. In the DOT, but in an interesting fashion. Every Senate Republican on the Joint Finance Committee voted against it, and it was through minority Democrats joining with Assembly Republicans that it was able to be approved.
So a little bit of bipartisanship.
Yeah, bipartisanship for a sort of questionable cause, I guess. But the Democratic argument all along has been that borrowing is unsustainable, but they favor the underlying projects. So Democrats had floated the idea of raising a gas tax for this or indexing the gas tax to inflation, and those were shot down. But ultimately, the Democrats wanted to see the projects go forward. And there is a there. I mean. it's at least contested. There is some argument that that the DOT's traffic estimates aren't necessarily reliable, and there are some people who are calling for the projects themselves not to go forward.
So you did say that it was the Senate Republicans who voted against it on joint finance. So what might that mean for how that'll play out ultimately in the state Senate?
Well, so this is the law, because this is the provision in the budget that if the JFC approved it, then it goes forward. So this will go forward. What I find more interesting, or anyway, what I find an interesting thing to watch is the Senate just last month unanimously approved, a Senate Audit Committee unanimously approved an audit of how the DOT does its traffic estimates and how it projects out what big highway construction projects need to be done. That's going to come out in about a year or so. So it could be very interesting to see whether what that finds and whether these statistics are reliable and whether that affects future highway requests.
Rob, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was news editor Robert Menser giving us the latest on the major news stories from around Wisconsin this week.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Judith Sears-Poisson.
More than 100 million people use the app Snapchat. Many users are found on university campuses like UW-Madison. Parth Shah has the story on the app that's changing the way many college students communicate.
Herds of students bustled through the UW-Madison campus during class change, some walking with headphones plugged into their ears, others zipping through walkways on their bicycles. Every so often, you'll see a student stop in their tracks, raise their phone to face level, and take a selfie. UW senior Akshada Redker is guilty of doing this.
Yeah, I take selfies while I walk. It feels awkward at first, but then I think like everyone else does it, so it doesn't really matter.
Redker takes her selfies on Snapchat, a popular photo video messaging app. According to a study by the marketing company Sumto, 4 out of 5 college students use Snapchat. The general concept is simple. Take a photo or video and send it to your friends. Once they open the Snap, they'll have up to 10 seconds to see it before the Snap disappears. Snapchat was released back in 2011. Redker downloaded it during her freshman year.
I thought it was really stupid because I just didn't see the point in sending people pictures and them going away. I just thought texting was easier.
But she had a change of heart when Snapchat launched its story feature.
Well, if you just want to, in general, share a picture or a moment, then you just put it on your story, so it's there for 24 hours, and anyone who's like following you or your friends, they can look at it.
According to the Pew Research Center, young adults like Redker make up the vast majority of social media users. 90% of millennials are active on platforms like Facebook or Instagram. But Redker says Snapchat is different.
If you go to Facebook or Instagram and you post something, you're like a lot of people are like, I want the likes. Like, you want people to like it. So you want people to see it and then hit the like button. Same thing on Instagram. The more likes you have, the better you feel. Snapchat's just one of those things where it's like, hey, how's it going? And then no one needs to like it or anything. It's gone after that.
Although Facebook remains the most popular app overall, it saw a nearly 10% dip in usage last year. Snapchat, on the other hand, had the largest growth of any social media app.
Snapchat really captured an important psychological need in creating ephemeral communication. It's a communication that disappears.
Catalina Toma is a communication science professor at UW-Madison. She researches social media. Toma says Snapchat makes online messaging less stressful.
You don't have to worry about consequences of saying maybe less than desirable things or things that you wish you could take back.
Redker agrees. Before Snapchat, pictures were used to reminisce and get likes. Now she sends them freely as a form of communication. Communication that's done mostly with other people her age. Less than a third of the app's users are over the age of 30.
Do you know many people that don't have the app?
My parents don't have it.
But what if they did? Somewhat reluctantly, Redker agreed to get her mom Rashmi to use Snapchat. Mama Redker jumped on the opportunity to test out a new app. She uses Facebook and WhatsApp a lot to stay in touch with family and friends, but she doesn't see Snapchat as a tool for keeping up with her entire social network. Instead, it's all about getting an extra set of eyes on her daughter.
I know where she is and what is she doing, so it's kind of a good parental control.
Despite the surveillance, Redker says it's not so bad snapping her mom, but it gets her thinking.
parents joined Facebook, so now it's like their thing, and now we have Snapchat.
Redker wonders how long before Snapchat becomes a parent thing too. Parth Shah, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And we want to hear from you now at 800-642-1234. Do you use Snapchat? What do you think about this social media app? What about other types of social media? Parents, grandparents, do you use social media to keep up with your children and grandchildren? Call in now at 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Now we turn to Central Time's resident Snapchat expert, producer Amanda Magnus. Amanda, welcome back.
Hey.
So why do you like, you like Snapchat a lot. So,
I love Snapchat.
But I don't know if we've ever had the conversation of why. What's the deal?
One of the things I like the most about Snapchat is that I can choose who receives the pictures that I'm sending. Something like Facebook or even Instagram, when you take a picture, it goes out to everybody. I think there are ways to filter photos, but I'm too lazy for that. I like Snapchat because I can choose whomever I want to see my photos.
Now, in Parth Shah's feature about Snapchat, he was talking about how few people over 30 are on it, but your parents use Snapchat and actually love it.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, my brother convinced all of us to get on Snapchat over Christmas because he works in Los Angeles as a producer, and he's often in rich people's homes or on really cool sets, and he sends us pictures from work. And then my parents got on board. You know, they didn't really want to, but they did, and they love it now. My dad has always been a fan of funny pictures. He's always emailing me funny pictures that he finds on the internet, and now he can take them in real life, in real time, and send them to me, and he loves it.
Let's bring in a caller. We've got Dylan in Kenosha. Dylan, hi, you're on the air. Oop, there you are.
Yeah, basically, I just want to be testimony that my mom and my grandmother both use Snapchat, and my mom uses the story more than I do. So just a little testimonial that it is starting to pick up with grandparents and parents.
What do you get from them? What kind of things are they snapping to you?
My mom's actually pretty good at it. I give her that. She takes little videos of these little things that when the sunlight hits it, it starts to move, and she'll put like music in the background. Pretty funny. I like it.
All right. She's putting some production value in there. Do you get this? Does your family get this fancy, Amanda?
My family doesn't, but some of my friends are really good artists. And one of the features of Snapchat is that you can draw on the picture in addition to adding text. So I have some friends who draw these really elaborate, fun things on pictures of themselves or, better yet, their cats.
So what kind of things would you like to share with people that maybe Snapchat doesn't work for, or does Snapchat really meet all of your social media needs?
I think it's hard to make plans over Snapchat. It has become a main communication hub for me and some of my friends, but it's hard to remember what plans you make because the pictures disappear. So in some ways, something like texting or like Facebook Messenger are better.
Back to our callers now with Hunter on the line in Milton. Hunter, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to point out that Snapchat isn't quite as ephemeral as everyone's making it out to be. It is possible to store that data, and it's a huge problem because a lot of teenagers are using it to sext each other, and then, you know, they can share it with their friends, and it can be saved to their phones. So they can have a permanent record of that sext.
Hunter, thanks a lot for the call. And I've heard this, that it is sometimes storable and sometimes hackable. So, Amanda, in your circles, do you think people have the same sense of the same etiquette of using a Snapchat, knowing that it's probably going to go away, but maybe there's that outside chance?
No, people send me things, particularly things that they wouldn't want ever for other people to see in print. There's a chat function, and the chats disappear. And people have said things to me on the chat function that I don't think they would have said in other ways.
Hopefully that doesn't come back to haunt anyone.
Yeah. Exactly. Let's go back to the phones, and Jessica in La Crosse is up next. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Sure. I do apologize for signal. I am in between hometown of La Crosse to Milwaukee, but I just wanted to chime in and add on to be completely honest, the rumor with Snapchat is the reason it was created was for sending those illicit images. And as a user, well, past user, ever since it signed me out, I just never really found the need to sign back in again. A lot of people just advertise their illicit drug use or even just, you know, short moments with their friends where they're doing something really, really stupid when they're really, really intoxicated. So just wanted to chime in and let that fact be known.
Thanks for that call, Jessica. And Amanda, what kind of things do you share with your friends? I mean, is it a way to give them a kind of a window into your everyday life?
That's exactly what my dad said when, after using Snapchat for a couple months, I asked him if he liked it. And he said, yes, I feel like I understand a lot more about your day, just seeing, you know, where you work or seeing you in your apartment. I snap people sometimes after I work out with my really cool gym hair.
I've received a few of those gym hair photos.
Yeah.
Well, I think with any form of human communication, from hieroglyphics to high-tech stuff, people are going to find negative ways to use it. But it seems like in that news feature and in your personal life, people are finding ways to stay in touch in long distances. Do you feel more connected with your family with this app?
Absolutely. I talk to my family a lot. We're very close. But there's just something really personal and intimate about seeing the things that they're seeing every day or exchanging pictures of my face selfies with them.
All right, Judith, are you on Snapchat?
I am, but I'm really bad about checking it.
I have not gone on it yet, despite Amanda's attempts to persuade every human she knows to give it a try.
Yeah.
Maybe someday. Maybe so. Though then that'll just chase my kids off of it, I suppose.
Exactly.
All right, well, Amanda, thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks for all of your calls. You can keep it going on social media, about social media. Just search Central Time on WPR on old-fashioned Facebook to find our page.
I'm Judith Sears Poisson.
And I'm Rob Ferrett. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrett.
And I'm Judith Sears Poisson, in for Veronica Rickert.
A lot of us in the United States are providing unpaid care to an adult, an older relative, say, or a family member with an illness or a disability. According to numbers from AARP and the CDC, as many as 34 million people are providing that kind of unpaid care, and that number is expected to go up.
While it can be a labor of love, it's still labor. In national surveys, half of all caregivers say they put off taking care of their own health needs because they put their family's needs first. And many report difficulty managing stress, time, and money.
So a little help can go a long way. November is National Family Caregivers Month, and AARP is promoting the message, be kind to caregivers. Amy Goyer joins us now to find ways to help out. She's a family and caregiving expert at AARP and author of the book Juggling Life, Work, and Caregiving. Amy, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Hi, it's great to be with you again, Rob.
What's the goal, Amy, of this Be Kind to Caregivers effort?
Well, you know, we know that 1 in 6 people in the United States are family caregivers. Everyone knows a caregiver, and we also know the challenges that everyone is facing. We're all juggling so much. I'm a caregiver myself. My dad is 92 and has Alzheimer's and lives with me, so I live this as well. And what AARP wanted to do was to recognize all the daughters and sons and spouses and friends and neighbors, everyone who's helping take care of adults, and also encourage them. And one of the ways to do that, as you say, is to lend a helping hand and do something kind for a caregiver. So we want to really encourage people to get out there and be doing nice things for caregivers. So we've actually even created a contest, the Random Acts of Kindness for Caregivers contest.
We'll talk a little more about concrete ways people can help out, but for people who haven't been in this situation, haven't been a caregiver, can you talk us through some of those day-to-day challenges that we might not know about if we're not doing this, if we're not on the inside?
Sure. Well, you know, one of the things we know is about 60% of family caregivers are working also, either a full or part-time job. And we spend about 18 hours a week on average caring for our loved ones. So, you know, it's essentially like having more than one job. So we're trying to live up with our work responsibilities as well as these personal and family responsibilities. That right there is a big challenge. Another thing is that we know that those over the age of 75 are more likely to be doing this on their own, which is kind of, you know, mind-blowing when you think about someone who's aging themselves and taking care of another loved one. So they especially need some support. In terms of day-to-day personal care, we're dealing with, you know, taking care of people in terms of wound care and medical tasks and medical equipment and really kind of pretty intense types of things. But we're also doing things like managing finances. We have 68% of family caregivers are spending their own money to take care of loved ones. So we have a lot of financial challenges. The biggest thing truly is time. There is just so much to do. And that's where other people can come in and either help with some of the tasks of caregiving, and maybe drive someone somewhere. Transportation is another thing a lot of us as caregivers provide. But we can also do things to support the caregiver themselves so they're freed up to do the care that only they can do.
Suppose somebody's listening and says, okay, you know what? I do know somebody who's a caregiver. I'd love to help them out. What's the etiquette? How do you approach someone? What kind of questions do you need to ask? I assume just a vague, hey, let me know if you need something, maybe isn't enough to get that started.
Great question. You're right. Lots of people offer. And it's hard for a caregiver to take them up on it because we as caregivers are so busy, we have to think of something for that person to do and explain it to them and that sort of thing. So that can be kind of a challenge. If you want to help a caregiver, ask to see their to-do list or ask what's on their list for today, and find out if there's something that you could do, run an errand for them or do something like that. You also want to be respectful, though, because sometimes caregivers are kind of hesitant. They don't want to complain. They feel like they should be able to do it all themselves. So approaching them with a little bit of reinforcement first. You know, I appreciate so much of what you're doing. You are incredible. I would love to do something to help out a little bit. And then make some suggestions. Then the caregiver can react to those, or they can say, well, that isn't really going to help me, but could you do this? Could you sort my mail for me? The mail is piled up. Or my lawn needs mowed. Or, you know, there are little things like that can make a huge difference for a caregiver.
Well, Amy, let's talk to that caregiver in that situation for a minute. You said some people might be reluctant to accept help. Maybe, you know, it's a pride issue, or maybe they want to show the world that they have it under control, or they just don't want to be a bother. How do you encourage them to take help that might be on offer?
I tell caregivers, and again, I'm living this, so I know of which I speak, that we have to take people up on their offers of help. And often we have to be specific with people about what we need because they don't necessarily know what will be helpful. But the reason to do this is partly because we have to take care of ourselves. It's not selfish to have some time for ourselves or take care of our own health care. It's practical because you simply cannot have the energy to put out and take care of someone unless, you know, you're putting energy in. It's like we don't expect our cars to run without gas on an empty tank, but we kind of expect ourselves to. It doesn't work that way. So it's a very practical thing to accept help from others.
Talking to Amy Goyer from AARP about the Be Kind to Caregivers campaign, an effort to get people to reach out to people who are caring for, say, maybe older family members and help out a little, help cross some items off the to-do list. You could join in, by the way, at 800-642-1234, maybe with your experiences, your questions, your stories, 800-642-1234. Amy, can you talk us through some things that people might do, maybe to help you in your personal life or stories you've heard of the kind of little things that can make a big difference?
You know, I recently had an experience with someone who was a complete stranger to me who helped me. I was in the grocery store and I just recently lost my sister, and my dad, who has Alzheimer's, was getting worse. I was just having a rough day. Mm-hmm. And it was apparently written all over my face because the clerk came around the counter and gave me a big hug. And as I was leaving the store, she ran after me with a bouquet of flowers. And I'll tell you what, it changed my whole outlook that day. And there are little things like that that you can do when you see there are people who hold the door open for me and my dad, who has a service dog too, so it's a lot to juggle, or when I was pushing my mom in her wheelchair. That is just so helpful, and it makes a caregiver feel less alone when people just reach out and do little things like that. And then there's other things. Last year, I came home from work one day, and my boyfriend had put away all my holiday decorations for me. And another year, friends came over and helped me put all the holiday decorations out. Those are things that bring great quality of life to me and those I'm caring for, but I never seem to have time. So things like that can be really helpful. Getting encouraging cards in the mail. I have a friend who always sends me cards, and that always perks me up. My sister one time sent me chocolate-covered strawberries just as and said thank you for what you're doing to take care of our parents. people are doing all kinds of interesting things. We have folks who are stopping by the house and doing things like cleaning out the gutters, getting the leaves out of the gutters this time of year, or taking your friend a dinner. Meals are one of those things that people always appreciate getting a meal, but find out what the dietary needs are before you do that and make sure it's food they can and will eat, them and their loved ones. You can do things like, I'm going to wash your car for you, or can I come in and just do your laundry this week and just get that done for you? People also do things like donate vacation days. When caregivers are having to take off a lot of time at work, find out if you can just donate some of your time to help them out.
Let's bring in. Oh, I'm sorry, Amy. I want to bring in a caller. We've got Al on the line in Manitowoc. Al, hi.
Hi. I wanted to share a story. I was caring for my wife who had cancer, and my brother and his girlfriend came over. His girlfriend got my wife ready. He helped me get ready. They called a limo and gave me $50 and sent us out on the town for the evening.
Wow! They give you a night out on the town.
Yeah, that was the last night I was able to spend with my wife out of town.
Wow. Well, Al, I'm very, very sorry for the story, but encouraged by the help your brother and his girlfriend gave you. So, yeah, you know, in my head, Amy, I'm thinking of, you know, the practical stuff. And you talked, you know, cleaning the gutters, transportation, that sort of thing. But you mentioned the, you know, the flowers and the hug. And he's talking about this experience, a last time in the life experience, as it turns out. That's something to keep in mind, too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All those things that quality of life things often get to the bottom of the list when you're caregiving because there's so many practical things you have to take care of. So anything that brings joy to a caregiver and the ones they're caring for, something that's light and fun and humor, you can watch a movie with them or get them out to yoga. One person suggested having a massage therapist come to their house and give them a massage.
Al, thanks again for that call. We're talking to Amy Goyer from AARP. Her message is be kind to caregivers. She's helping us find ways to help out friends, family, maybe coworkers and others who are providing care for an adult family member.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Are you a caregiver? Have there been acts of kindness that have helped you out? What kind of help could you use? Or if you know someone who's a caregiver and want to help out, maybe Amy can give you some advice on what to do. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. We continue our conversation with Amy Goyer from AARP. It's National Family Caregivers Month, and Amy's sharing ways we can help people who are caring for aging family members and other adult friends and relatives.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Is this you? Are you a caregiver, maybe caring for an aging parent? What kind of help could you use from friends and family? What kind of help have you gotten? Is there a little thing that really made a difference? Or do you have questions for Amy about how to reach out for help or maybe how to offer help to someone in that situation? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to another caller. Amy, we've got Mike on the line in Richland Center. Mike, hi.
Hi. You know, I've just happened to get in on the tail end of your conversation here. I am a caregiver for my mother, who is a candidate for a lung transplant. She has very severe COPD. I've been balancing this pretty much on my own. We come from a large family, but we're kind of detached. We're living, you know, 4 hours away from our hometown. What I had mentioned to, I guess, the woman that had answered the phone, I think it could be an important thing just to for someone to be there to listen to a caregiver and let them vent and, you know, and things like that, you know, because there's just so much that mounts, you know, the pressure. I mean, I deal with a very demanding mother who, you know, it creates a serious amount of pressure, and it's hard to balance, you know.
Mike, thank you so much for bringing that up. I appreciate it. And good luck, by the way, to you and to your mother as she maybe gets this procedure. Amy, listening, a sympathetic ear, somebody you can vent to is a big help, it sounds like.
Oh, yes. He was actually reading my mind. I was just thinking that sometimes that's the best gift you can give a caregiver, because we're so focused on the people we're taking care of all the time, and we're going, you know, 100 miles an hour all the time. Who stops and asks the caregiver, how are you doing? How are you feeling? You know, what's happening, you know, emotionally? It's a very emotional experience. And sometimes it's nice just to have someone who's focused on us as caregivers and to listen to what's going on. One of the things that happens sometimes is you kind of start to lose some of your friends because they don't quite understand or identify with what you're going through. So be that friend that sticks around. Be that friend who goes through that caregiving experience with one of your friends and, you know, champions them along the way. Be their best cheerleader.
I want to talk about who's in this circle of who we might go to for help or who we might offer help to, because in my head I think close relative, close friend, but should we be thinking about, you know, coworkers, people in our congregations, social groups, that sort of thing?
Absolutely. Neighbors, you know, are one of the most important ones. If you have a neighbor who you know is caregiving, there are things you can do right there in the neighborhood. Take their trash out for them or do things, you know, right there. Coworkers can just be aware of what's going on and offer supports as they can. Again, that, you know, take them out to lunch at work and listen to how things are going. Your faith community is a really good point. And a lot of times people kind of band together and they say, let's all go over and we're going to put up so-and-so's holiday decorations this year, or we're going to go and do a fall yard cleanup for them. Sometimes groups of people can get together and help out.
Mike, again, thanks for calling and good luck to you. You can join our conversation at 800-642-1234 as we talk to Amy Goyer from AARP about the effort to get people to be kind to caregivers, to help out people caring for maybe an aging relative, to do something practical, but maybe something fun, symbolic, or even just listen, share your stories, your needs, maybe at 800-642-1234. Susan is with us next in New Berlin. Susan, hi.
Hi, hi. I was calling about taking care of little people, of kids, you know, moms who are stressed. When my son was born, he was in the hospital quite a bit, and then I had a 2.5-year-old home as well, and I was pretty, you know, I had just given birth, too, so kind of tired. And one day my sister came over and made me go take a nap. And she took care of all the kids, I mean, her own and mine. And, you know, just said, go take a nap. Don't try to get some other housework done or something like that. Just go sleep. And I will wake you up. And she told me what time she was going to wake me up. And actually, she had supper ready when I was done. But, oh, my God, just to be able to relax without having to have that one ear open to listen for babies crying. And I know for elders and for spouses who are taking care of parents, and probably Amy taking care of her dad at her house, you don't really sleep all the way because you're thinking you have to be listening.
Susan, thanks so much for bringing that up. The gift of a break and the gift of some sleep, Amy.
Absolutely, and she nailed it on the head. You know, you don't sleep fully well every night when you, unless you know your loved ones are okay. So, a huge gift would be, you know, spending the night and doing that night shift one night for someone who isn't getting much sleep. I think that time to just fully be away from caregiving and relax is one of the hugest gifts. So either offering to stay with a loved one or helping, you know, put together some money to pay for a few hours of respite so your friend can go take a nap or go to a movie or go to their own doctor's appointments. We've got to take care of ourselves as caregivers.
Susan, thanks so much for sharing that great example. We'll go next to Amy with us in Madison. Amy, hi.
Hi, how are you? I'm just calling to say I think this is a really great idea. My husband and his siblings are all spread all over the country, and there's one caregiver or two that are closer by. And they do at least every other week conference call with all the siblings just to get everybody on the same page, keep everybody in the loop, and that way everybody kind of feels like they know what's going on.
Amy, that's a great plan, and that makes me think of something, Amy Goyer. A lot of times families are in that position. Maybe a couple siblings are in the same town as mom or dad. Others are spread out around the country. How can those long-distance helpers, family or friends, make a difference, even if they can't really be there that often?
they can, first of all, find out, you know, just stay apprised. Try not to be that person who's kind of on the fringe. You know, check in with your sibling who's caring for your parent and find out how they're doing. I had my sister call every night. She calls my dad and talks to him. And that's one little moment in time when I know that he's going to perk up. His mood may change and get better because she made that call. That's a gift to me as a caregiver as well as to my dad. Finding ways that you can help support the caregiver from a distance, whether it's like my sister sent me strawberries or flowers or cards, but also just showing appreciation in any way. It makes us feel more supported and validated in what we're doing, and find out what you can do from a distance. I have lots of friends who help me out and family members doing research, online research. You know, I need this product for dad. What's the best place to buy it? Boom. Somebody else can do that research. That's something that doesn't have to take my time.
Amy, thanks for that call. We'll go next to Kathy joining us in Madison. Kathy, hi.
Hi.
What'd you want to bring up, Kathy?
I took care of my mom when she had cancer, and I was still in college, and so I tried my best to make as many appointments as possible, but when I couldn't, she had a lot of great friends that were willing to take her. But one thing that I did to kind of lessen my stress as a caregiver was I put together a binder that listed where her appointments were, her doctors, what the doctors were for, all of her medications and things like that. And it kind of saved me stress because I knew it was all there in one place. And then I knew, too, that I didn't have to get in touch with the person who was taking her and go over all this stuff and make sure I didn't forget to tell them any information that they would need when they were with my mom.
Kathy, thanks. So organizing yourself as a caregiver not only helps you, but helps you fit those helpers into the scene, Amy.
Being organized is absolutely key. It's the only way to survive this caregiving experience. And she brings up a really good idea of something that you could do to help a caregiver. Help them organize paperwork and file things. It's unbelievable how much paperwork I get in relation to caregiving for my parents. You could also help go in the house and organize a closet. Those are the things I never get to. So when I have a friend or someone who comes and helps me reorganize the garage so I can find things easily, or go through my dad's clothes and get rid of the things that doesn't fit him anymore. Take those things to be donated somewhere for me. It's done. It's out of my mind. I don't have to worry about it, and it makes my day-to-day life easier.
And on a related note, we heard an email from Susan who says, you have to schedule time to reach out to caregivers or it easily falls off your radar. Put it on your calendar once or twice a week. So if you're someone who wants to help that caregiver, get it on your books. Schedule that ahead of time.
Great idea. Great idea. And again, repeated things is nice. You know, a one-time thing is great, but sometimes you can even offer to do something on a regular basis for that person. I'll come over once a week and sort the mail or make a meal. On Sundays, you don't cook. I'm going to bring the food.
And Amy, before we're done, earlier you mentioned there's a contest for AARP, this Be Kind to Caregivers. How can people check that out?
I'm really excited about this. It's a AARP's Random Act of Kindness for Caregivers contest. And there's a website. You can go to aarp.org/caregiverkindness. It's aarp.org/caregiverkindness and submit your photo and your story of the acts of kindness. And we're going to be through March. You can submit once a week. And we're going to be choosing 12 winners who've made a really meaningful difference in the lives of family caregivers who are going to split a $10,000 cash prize. And the idea is to just get people thinking about this. We all know caregivers in our lives, and we may feel sorry for them or we may feel empathy for them, but let's do something about it and share our stories. And already we've got people who are submitting just incredible things that they're doing for loved ones, and we really think it's going to create momentum to raise awareness about the needs of caregivers.
Amy, thanks for joining us, and good luck in your own caregiving.
Thank you so much. It was great to be with you.
That's Amy Goyer, AARP family and caregiving expert, author of Juggling Life, Work, and Caregiving. You can find out more about that AARP caregiving contest on the Central Time Facebook page.
I'm Judith Sears-Poisson.
And I'm Rob Ferret. News is next here on Central Time.